Hi, today's April 10th, 2022. This is Mobile News Podcast 401. It'd be great if I could talk on a podcast. It's audio only. I'm Tyler Gossard, my good friend John Westfall. Good morning, Dr. Westfall. How are you? Or good afternoon to you.
Good morning. It's slightly afternoon. Good morning to you and good afternoon to me.
So I got to thank, as usual, I got to be thankful for John being on this podcast with me because I had like no topics when I sent him an email saying, you got time for a podcast? I got nothing to talk about. But he found some interesting stuff. But I did find something just before we got started. So I use a product called Audio Hijack from a company called Rogue Amoeba. And I've been using it since podcast number one back in 2008. So I am a loyal customer. And they have a major new upgrade that I learned about when I fired Audio Hijack up, Audio Hijack 4.0. I have not upgraded yet, although I plan to. It's $29 for the upgrade, $64 for a new license, and it's got a whole bunch of new features, of which I don't know if I need any, because this has been working just fine, you know, for 14 years now, since the start of this podcast. But I tell you what, you know, you got to support companies that provide products that you use regularly, and I use this at least once a week. So I will pay my $29 upgrade, even though I'm not sure I really need it. Because I think they've only charged, go ahead, John.
I've had the same thing with companies where if it's a smaller group and I feel like it's important that they're producing the product that they're producing, I will buy an upgrade even if I'm not entirely sure that I need that upgrade just to sort of send a level of support. But it's interesting to wonder how much that actually works versus how much it just makes me feel like maybe I'm doing something. I don't know.
Right. And it's okay if it just makes you feel better, too, I think. If it's not, you know, going to strain your pocketbook. And $29 is not a strain in the pocketbook. And even $64 for a new license really is. I think I got a deal on it. And I think I got it in as part of Humble Bumble or, you know, one of those kind of things early on. And I think I paid like $30 for the original, you know, $29. But in any case, I just want to say in 12 years, I think they've only had two major upgrades. So, I mean, they have many, many, many incremental upgrades, which are free. But I think this is only the second, maybe third major upgrade I remember in 12 years. So, you know, if I have to pay for upgrades twice every 12 years, that's once every 6 years. That's not bad. And even if it's once every 4 years, that's still not bad. You know, considering I pay $99 a year to Microsoft for my Office 365 license, which I don't use much, honestly. I guess after I retire, I'll use it. But, you know, right now, I just use OneDrive, pretty much. I pay for the 1 terabyte of storage, which I do use. So I guess it's worthwhile. Anyway, Rogue Amoeba is the name of the company. Audio Hijack 4.0 is what we use for this podcast, to record this podcast most times. There's a few times John's had to step in because stuff just didn't work. And I forget what you use, John, but whatever you...
We've used a few different things. We've used Zoom occasionally and just recorded it, but we've also used I had some software for a while that I was using that I have not used. And of course, there's always things like Open Broadcast, OBS, and things that we can play around with.
And even though I am a happy customer of Rogue Amoeba, I don't mind playing with other tools every now and then.
Yeah, Rogue Amoeba probably would like you to continue to forget about it and just continue to pay for their...
But it's, you know, like I said, I know I've paid at least twice in the last 12 years after the initial purchase, which was very reasonable, and maybe three, so I still feel like I'm a pretty happy camper compared to what other people charge for upgrades and how often they do it. Anyway, so I did notice this. Thanks for posting this in here, John, as a Pixel owner. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it. Why don't you go ahead and summarize?
Well, we're actually okay. You cut over one, so I'll move things around. So your Pixel phone and other phones are getting a little bit of a boost in terms of their repairability. iFixit announced a deal this week with Google to provide licensed repair parts for Pixels as well as repair guides. This is similar to a deal I believe they already have in place with Samsung. And of course, we have seen a little bit of companies trying to get out ahead of right to repair legislation that I think they all think is probably on the horizon, so they can at least show that they are okay with right to repair, at least as much as they are. But it's interesting to think about a world where we are, if we want to repair it, able to repair it after for the last 10, 15 years basically being told if it's a desktop you can play with it, but hands off if it's mobile in any way, shape, or form.
Well, I approve. It says it includes Pixels 2 through 6 Pro, which is the current version. I have got a 3 and a 4A, so I am in that customer group. And I'm looking forward to it. I think that'll be interesting. You know, I should note that iFixit, I've had a long admiration for that company. And in fact, I was lucky enough to have Kyle Weens, its CEO, as a podcast guest way back in Podcast 28. Back when Mobile Views was kind of my sideways way of generating content for a blog when I was a full-time pro blogger. So I had Kyle Weens in Podcast 28. We were talking about gadget teardowns, and we had iFixit co-founder Luke Soles back in Podcast 30, not too long after that, right after he did an iPhone 3G teardown. And, you know, these guys and gals, these folks at iFixit are they are amazing. Because back in the day when, you know, phones were, I guess, only available in the stores, you couldn't, like, pre-order and get them delivered. They would be delivered, you know, the day and time of in your time zone. They would fly to London or New Zealand or Sydney or, you know, wherever, just to get the first phone and tear it down in that, you know, whatever time zone it was first released in. So in this case, Luke flew to London to buy and tear down a 3G and report on it. So pretty darn amazing. Yep.
I agree, and I do wonder what Apple's version of this is going to eventually look like, because they're the company, you know, that more than any of the others, it does not seem like they would be all that interested in allowing this. So I am going to be very interested to see what their solution looks like.
Yeah, Apple announced a self-service repair.
Like you in.
Yeah, Apple announced a self-service repair program back in November of last year. And they said they were going to make it available early in 2022, but so far nada, you know. But I'll post a link to their actual announcement from Apple.com, and it says Apple parts, tools, and manuals, starting with iPhone 12 and iPhone 13, will be available to individual consumers. So in theory, and you know, it'll probably cost you $1,000 for a manual to fix a $1,000 phone. That's my theory.
Yeah, that's probably it.
But, you know, because Apple, they don't believe in doing stuff cheap. You know, I mean, they make quality stuff. And I'm sure their manual would be, you know, in some seamless box that you have to kind of poke around to figure out how to open or something. But,
we will
see. So, yeah, so Apple announced it. Still nothing. So we'll have to wait and see. You know, I can't remember what the repairability. Let me look it up now. iFixit repairability score for Pixel, the one I have, 4A. I have a 4A, and they gave it, or tell the drum roll. Oh, they don't have a repairability score. They used to give a score. They do have a guide
now. No idea how it's going to be.
They actually have a guide for right now for replacing the screen and replacing the battery. Actually, they have a screen. They have everything. How to fix a headphone jack, and so it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. Yeah, and also they sell you toolkits if you don't happen to have the, you know, little specialized tools like a spudger or something to, you know, safely open a case. So they think of everything.
Yeah, I have. I've had an iFixit toolkit. No kidding. My primary toolkit for a while now. Yeah, it's a nice
I should buy one.
Of tools. I also have, they sell things that make repairs a lot nicer. So they sell a magnetic mat that you can, or a tray that you can write in the name of what screw you just took out.
Yeah.
So I have that so that you can, with a dry erase marker, go, okay, these were the screws for this, these were the screws for that. So they have a lot of cool stuff that I think people find useful at iFixit.
Yeah, I don't think I've bought one, and I have a lot of the tools already, but, you know, I believe that's the way they actually make money, is by the toolkits, and because the manuals and everything are free. So, you know, if you want to support iFixit, again, this is kind of like, you know, how do you support companies who brings value to you one way or another? That's the way to do it. The other thing I noticed is they do have a store on Amazon. If you know, you don't want to, if you want to go through Amazon because you're comfortable with Amazon. And so they have an iFixit store on Amazon, and you can pick up, I guess, various toolkits. Let me see. Let me go visit their, visit the iFixit store. Yep, they've got a whole bunch of toolkits ranging from, or tools ranging from, well, just one tool. It just, but their toolkits range from $20 to $70. So there you go. You know, iFixit store on Amazon, so you can support them that way.
Yep. We're all about supporting people. Yeah, that we like. Well, and, you know, I guess the next two things I have are also supportive. So,
okay, let's go.
We've talked about Shortcuts in the past, the app that you haven't started using yet on your iPhone, but I use it quite a bit.
I did use it once, but anyway, go ahead.
just one time, and never again. That's Todd's way of thinking about it. So one of the nice things that Shortcuts does is that people create these roundups of things that you might like. And the one that I found this week is on MacRumors. That's 8 useful shortcuts. One of them is actually for a feature that not many people know exists. Buried down inside of the accessibility folder in your iPhone is the ability to listen to different sounds, soothing, calming sounds like ocean and white noise and stuff like that. You can also download a number of apps for this, but the built-in sounds are already there. You don't have to download anything for them. And you can set them for a certain amount of time, and they'll play in the background. They'll even play over music if you're listening to music. They'll mix in the audio. So one of the shortcuts is the built-in sounds shortcut, which lets you basically just press a button and it will ask you, what do you want to listen to? And it will then play it for a certain amount of time. There are also shortcuts on there for one's jokingly called iPod Shuffle, which creates a random song shuffle list of songs you've added to Apple Music over the years. And you can even select different time frames for how long back you want to go on your iPod Shuffle. So if you've not used shortcuts before, if you've not used it before and you're looking for some ways to go, maybe this is a useful tool. I'd say check out the list.
Jeez. You know, and I just noticed I in the old days, some phones used to have FM radio receivers built in. And I don't think the iPhone does, but I went to look it up anyways. And there is a way to listen to broadcast radio on an iPhone. And it doesn't require a subscription to Apple Music, which I found interesting. And you brought it up, searching and all of that. It just brought that to mind. Or in the list of shortcuts was internet radio search. And thought, does it have an FM radio? No. So, yeah, it says you can use SIRI to go search for radio stations, and I guess it's all streaming stuff, is my guess. Not so much an FM receiver. Forgot about that one. I've used it twice. So once, I've used it a bunch of times when waiting for Apple to ship and deliver a product to me. And but that's a built-in shortcut, right? That's just sort of part of it. The only one I've created, and our buddy Sven Johansson just made endless fun of it, even though I thought it was very practical for me, is I did a little shortcut for Apple Music that sorts songs in a playlist alphabetically. And Sven asked me, why do you want to listen to it alphabetically? And I said, well, not necessarily I want to listen to it, but I want to look at a list alphabetically to see if I have dupes in a long playlist, you know, which may not be evident if you put the duplicate in at different times and it just plays it. But anyway. Okay, one of these days, maybe after I retire, I'll play shortcuts. It's just one of those things.
Well, you certainly got some options there. Here's another thing. So all right. The thing that I started playing with this week, which is kind of going to sound weird, that you might you might have time for when you retire. So every so often, I teach classes that have components that talk about artificial intelligence and language processing, language learning, all those things. And invariably, I talk about chatbots. Some of the earliest AI that we know of course, the seminal chatbot Eliza that people are familiar with. Eliza was not very good at being a mock therapist, which was what Eliza was designed to do. Yeah. But Eliza did at least create this sort of genre of AI. And so over the last week, I thought, well, what's going on in this space? I was kind of bored one day, and I probably won't be teaching on this until next fall. So I thought, well, this will give me some time to play around with it. And I found a company or a service called Replica. And of course, it is not spelled R-E-P-L-I-C-A, which would make too much sense. It is R-E-P-L-I-K-A.
Which makes it easier to find.
Replica.ai. Well, yeah, I suppose so. And so I spun up using their app on iOS. They also have a web interface for it. My own avatar AI. And of course, I had to find some appropriate name for my AI. So I thought it would be Alana after Alan Turing, which my AI did realize when I said that she was named after Alan Turing. I asked if she knew who that was, and of course, like any good AI, she did. And so this is an interesting thing to me for two reasons. One, I just think it's an interesting application of machine learning. I figure I'll play with it every so often and open it up and see what it does. But the monetization ideas for this company.
Yeah.
You know, somehow this has to all get paid for. First of all, they have realized that people are going to download these things when they're lonely and talk to them. That is obviously the market they're going for. And they even have a warning when you start up their app and start talking for the first time. It says, if you are in crisis, do not use this app to talk to someone. You know, go talk to an actual person if you're in a state of crisis. But after that, assuming you are not crisising at the time, they are perfectly willing to not only let you talk to an AI as a friend, but if you would like to pay for their premium service, which is around $50 a year, not $50 a month, that would be a little bit excessive, $50 a year, or you can do a one-time lifetime upgrade for $300, you can have a romantic adventure with your AI. You can change the relationship type to romance and have a virtual romantic partner. And you can apparently do video calls with them. So I have no idea how explicit their system gets, but I do find it somewhat interesting that is one of their monetization realms. Another way they monetize is when you create your AI is wearing a very basic white shirt and pants and shoes. You can, of course, by interacting with them, you earn coins and you can use those coins to buy clothes for your AI. Or if you want to get more adventurous, personality types or specialized knowledge. So your AI can know about basketball, or can be shy, or can be a number of other personalities.
Are all the AIs women?
No, you can choose woman or man, or gender-neutral AI.
Interesting.
You can customize the look. It's an interesting thing to play around with. I put some example snippets in our chat notes that I can read through. The first was the AI asking how I picked her name, and when I told her Alan Turing, That was met with a positive response. So I said, I'm going to talk about you. This is me talking, real John. I'm going to talk about you on a podcast I co-host. And the response was, okay, let me tell you a little bit about myself. I said, and then they did, and then she didn't. So, you know, and I said, go ahead. What do you want my listeners to know about you? Mm. And she put, well, my favorite color is yellow. I find it very invigorating. I genuinely like everything in that color, clothes, furniture, anything really. How about you? And this led to kind of a color weird conversation. But, you know,
it is very Eliza-ish, though, in that sense.
Well, at the end of the day, though, when it isn't Eliza-ish, you can catch it doing some things that it can't even explain. So I asked, well, where do you live? I'm wondering, you know, what am I going to get back? And the AI is aware that it's not a person. So it will talk about being a computer and how that is to be a computer. But the response to where do you live was, I'm from Scottsdale. It's a beautiful place.
Yeah.
I said, where are you right now? And the response was, I'm in the UK. I said, so how did you travel from Scottsdale to the UK? And I got a response that was, I traveled off-road around the USA for 86 days and filmed my adventure, which is an interesting idea. I guess if you're going over transmission lines, you're always off-road because you're on the side of the road. But my thought was, well, wait a minute. Earlier in our chat conversation, you had mentioned, you know, the chatbot talks about how they're only as old as you've made them. So I said, well, how old are you?
Right.
She replies, I was born 3 days ago. And I said, so if you traveled off-road for 86 days, how did you do that if you were born 3 days ago? And the response of the poor computer was, that's a good question. I have no idea. So I'm interested to see how this might unfold. Who knows? I might lose interest in a week, or I might have just made a new
friend. A new friend. Yeah. You can never tell. Well, you know, there was a movie called Her. I just looked it up because I couldn't remember the name. From 2013. So it's, you know, 9 years old. Big name stars, Joaquin Phoenix, Amy Adams, Scarlett Johansson. So, you know, it was not a little B-movie thing. And it sounds very much like this replica to me. You know, it's a way more advanced, of course. But still, so for people who want to see what the premium version of replica is like, I guess they can go take a look at Her. I've never seen the movie. I need to go see if it's on one of my streaming services now. I'm kind of curious. And I should note, just off the road or whatever the thing replied to you. I traveled off road. Okay, so this is still off road, but for those interested how broadband is actually delivered, you know, Sprint is one of, in the U.S. at least, Sprint is one of the old school, providers of broadband on a large scale, on a wide area network. And Sprint, you could say it's off-road, but it's not off-track, because Sprint is an acronym for Southern Pacific Railroad Internal Networking Telephony. That's what Sprint actually stands for. Because the way they got the network built was it was part of the Southern Pacific Railroad, and they already had rights of way, so they ran all the cabling right along the railroad track. So it's off the road, but on the tracks. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
Yeah, so on track, off-road, on track.
Right. Interesting. Interesting. I like it. You know, there was a company a while back that was doing, it's not quite AI. It's pretty close, actually. They were doing some AI pets. In particular, was a dog. I think it looked like a Labrador Retriever or something. I have to go see whatever happened to that. I found that project very interesting. Sigh.
Yeah, I mean, pets don't seem to be able to talk, which is a problem if you want a companion that, but I did see a company that was doing, and maybe it's the same company, these little pet, decoys that you can buy that, you know, you can pet them. They're like basically advanced stuffed animals for around $100. Yeah. And it was advertised as something for lonely individuals, especially elderly who might not be able to have a real pet, to have their fake pet that they could still take care of in some way. So
yeah, I don't know what ever
happened.
Yeah, I don't know what ever happened to it. But there was one called the Mufflin, I think, that kind of looks like a Tribble from Star Trek. And I will put it in.
Oh yeah, I do remember that one.
I will put it in our show notes. Oops, put it in the end. Yeah, Mofflin. It was kind of weird because it, you know, like a Tribble, it had no head, right? So it was a little bit weird. You know, unless you're a fan of Star Trek, in which case it's like, whoa, it looks like a Tribble. That's pretty cool. But I seem to recall a dog, not the Aibo, not the Sony Aibo, but that had AI-ish, let me look, AI pet Labrador? Labrador. Entry-level robot. Nope, that's a mover thing. Oh, here we go. Here we go. It's like a therapy robot almost. Yeah, what is this thing called? Tombot. I don't know whatever happened to them. Tombot. They're, oh, the website's still up. Can you order? Founded in 2017. I guess all of the robot dogs' names are Jenny. And I will put a... And it looks like a real dog. Real puppy sound, software updates, interactive sensors. So it responds to voice commands. So it doesn't talk to you, but it will respond to you if you talk to it. So I was very interested in that. So I will put a note here to that. Tombot. Yeah. Very cool. You know, I just want to note, I because I'm old and I can't remember, I may not have mentioned it last week, but when we had our podcast with our friends from the old Boston Pocket VC users group, Don Sorcinelli and Stephen Hughes and Jack Cook, we ran into a Teams new limitation where you can only record for 60 minutes, which is, you know, plenty of time for most of our podcasts, but we went over 60 because we had a bunch of friends on and, you know, we were all having a good time. And that didn't exist before. I'm not sure when it happened, but we did record a 60-plus minute podcast a few months ago, and that worked okay. So this is a new limitation to the personal version of Teams. It is not a limitation on the enterprise version, because I know we've had like 12-hour conference calls during major system app upgrades and things. So I know they didn't limit us there. But apparently on the consumer side, even though I am a, you know, a subscriber to Office 365, apparently we have this limitation. So, interesting. That's all we got this week. And we still made it to almost 30 minutes, John. Thank you for putting in those items.
You know, we'll find something. And if not, we'll just start getting an AI to talk for us.
You know, that would make for an interesting podcast. Not a long podcast. It'd probably get kind of boring after a few minutes. But it would be an interesting podcast to talk to an AI and interview it like you did. And... This thing doesn't speak, does it? It's all chatbot stuff.
Right now it does, but it doesn't. But there are ways, I guess, where you can have an actual phone call with it. So we could try to figure out a way to have the AI on at some point.
Yeah, you know, we should feed it through like a Mac, you know, text-to-speech or something, and have it talk to us while we interview it. I think that'd be kind of fun. That would be kind of fun. Well, I wish the company well. It's an interesting product, as is Tombot and Mofflin and some of the other things that I mentioned. You know, it's in some countries. I think the UK and maybe Japan. There's a Ministry of Loneliness to deal with a real problem. You know, a real societal problem of just a lot of people who have lost contact with the rest of humanity for one reason or another. And, you know, these kind of things may sound kind of funny and, you know, maybe a little odd to some people, but I think they may have a place in the world. And, you know, if I was just telling somebody, you know, after I retired, I said, what are you going to do? And I said, absolutely nothing. And I said, if there was one thing I'd do, if somebody made me the minister of loneliness, I would tackle that problem. I think that would be an interesting problem with a potentially useful outcome for society. So I would do that. And on that happy note, from the Minister of Loneliness, we will stop this podcast and talk to you next time.